half the female residents of Bootleg Springs had turned out for June's book club. Many wore matching t-shirts that said Book Babes on the front. I saw everyone from Carolina Ray Carwell, who'd been claiming to be 60 years old since before I had disappeared, to Lula, the drop-dead gorgeous owner of the Bootleg Springs Spa. There were young women in sundresses or flannels and cutoffs, and a little cluster of new moms who'd worn heels and lipstick like they were living it up on a rare night out. Women whose grown daughters were here with them, and a circle of white-haired women with crepe paper skin, several of whom had their knitting out. Jenny Leland was here, who for so many years had been my one last tenuous, almost anonymous tie to this place, to the good parts of my past. She stood smiling and talking with Nadine Tucker and Betsy Larkin, Leah May's stepmom. And among the large group, the women who'd scooped me up into their lives without question, Scarlett, Cassidy, June, and Leah May, girls I'd known when we were young, girls I'd spent summers with, long days of running around town, piling into booths at Moonshine to share milkshakes, giggling about boys, swimming in the lake. And Shelby, who in the short time we'd known each other had treated me like we were long-lost friends. It was like looking at the intersection of my past and my future, all in one place. A past I'd been struggling to outrun, and a future that, until recently, hadn't seemed possible. With a deep breath, I let the flurry of emotions pass through me. One feeling settled like a gentle mist. Contentment. I didn't feel anxious or antsy, wondering where I was going next, despite the fact that I was closer to danger than I'd been in years in terms of physical proximity. I wasn't compelled to constantly look over my shoulder. I'd developed habits as Maya that I'd barely noticed. Watching over my shoulder, checking and double-checking locks, wiping down surfaces to get rid of fingerprints. I'd willfully ignored them, telling myself they weren't out of the ordinary, trying to convince myself that I was fine. I'd moved on. But here, in this funny little town that was famous for not letting go of the past, I felt some of those habits slipping away, or easing their hold on me at the very least. I didn't look over my shoulder as often because I knew there were other people around who had my back. I'd stopped wiping down the booth at Moonshine or the table at Yeehaw Yarn and Coffee before I left. I still checked locks, but not as frequently. And there was no doubt in my mind those things meant something. "There you are," Jenny said, her gaze landing on me. She wore a pretty floral blouse and capri-length pants. "I was hoping we'd see you here." I hugged her, enjoying her motherly embrace. "Looks like I've been missing out. There are so many people. Fun, isn't it? I've only been one other time, but now I'm hooked. Oh, and the books are good, too." She winked. "There's more than enough food. Feel free to dish up. And Nadine says to make sure we all pack up at least one full plate for our men before we go. They need to keep up their strength." I took a plate and wandered down one side of the tables, adding a few things that looked good. If I tried even half of what was here, I'd be too stuffed to breathe. But I did make sure to grab a good-sized piece of Carolina Ray's cornbread. I remembered it from before, and it was famous in four counties for a reason. Millie Waggle approached, in a blue calico dress with a white collar that closed at her throat. She wore a name tag that read, "Hi, my name is," and she'd written Millie Waggle in perfect cursive. She was the only one with a name tag.
"Hi, Maya. It's awful nice to see you."
I smiled at her.
"Thanks. You have to tell me what you brought tonight so I make sure to get at least two." "Lemon bars and blueberry muffins," she said, beaming with pride. "I thought about baking something with chocolate, but I feel like I've been getting too predictable lately."
"Have you ever thought about opening a bakery?" Millie Waggle's baked goods could turn the staunchest low-carb dieter back to the dark side of sugar and flour.
"Oh, I don't know." Her cheeks took on a hint of pink. "It's just something I do for fun." that's nice, too. I know everyone enjoys your baking.
Thank you kindly. Can I just say, I like your hair, and, well, it's just real good to see you again.
Thanks. My smile faded, and I busied myself reaching for a blueberry muffin. The way she'd said that, did she know who I was? Looking up, I noticed a handful of the women watching me. A few leaned together and spoke quietly. I couldn't be sure that they were talking about me, or that if they were, it was because they knew the truth. But I had a feeling my identity was on the verge of coming out. These people were smart and observant, and their memories were sharp. The novelty of Gibson having a woman in his life had been distraction enough for a little while. But now they were starting to see me, and more than a few probably guessed who I was. And yet, if they did know, they were keeping it quiet. I decided the chance of an unexpected Callie Kendall reveal at tonight's book club was unlikely. I'd discuss it with Gibson, but we needed to come forward to the rest of the town with the truth sooner rather than later.
Everybody, direct your attention here.
June gestured for people to be quiet. Her dark blonde hair was pulled back in a simple ponytail, and she had an extra helping of summer freckles scattered across her nose and cheeks. Her Book Babes t-shirt was white with blue lettering.
Thank you. Since our group is increasing in size, it has become necessary to dichotomize into separate subgroups. I've created a spreadsheet detailing the members of each. You've been separated by a process of random number generation that allowed for the greatest chance of demographic diversity within each smaller classification.
The room went silent, eyes darting around. George's voice broke the silence.
She means she divided y'all up into smaller groups because there's a lot of you.
The lone man in the room, at least that I could see, sat away from the gathered women. He had an ankle crossed over one knee, his large frame dwarfing a rickety folding chair.
Precisely, June said with a satisfied nod. If you'll just refer to page 3 of your handouts, we can begin rearranging into the aforementioned groupings.
Another silence followed her instructions, only broken by the rustling of paper as some of the book clubbers flipped through a stapled packet. George didn't look up from the magazine in his lap.
Junebug, maybe everyone can just break up into groups on their own. Might be a touch easier.
That's also acceptable, June said.
Y'all, just sit with who you want so you can discuss the book, George said.
He glanced up, meeting June's eyes, and his face broke into a wide smile. She beamed back at him. The noise level rose again as the ladies all gathered purses, tote bags, and paper plates piled with food and moved their chairs into smaller circles. I walked over to Shelby, who gave me a quick hug hello. We tucked in with a group that included Cassidy, Scarlett, Emily, who also eyed me like she knew a secret, and Dixie Miller, a white-haired woman with clear blue eyes and a lap full of her knitting. It occurred to me as I watched all the ladies settle in that there was a distinct lack of Misty Lynn Prosser in this room. Of course, it was a book club. That sounded like Misty Lynn repellent to me. Nadine paused by our circle, met Cassidy's eyes, and gave her a little smile. Then she dragged her chair to another group nearby. Looking around, it seemed like none of the ladies with grown daughters in attendance were sitting with them. Maybe they were just trying to sit with people they didn't see as often, a nod to June's attempt at randomization.
Well, y'all, I don't even know where to begin with this one, Scarlett said. It was even better than the last book, do y'all agree?
Heads bobbed with enthusiastic nods.
I was particularly interested in the shenanigans on the couch, Scarlett continued. Did y'all find that difficult to picture, or was it just me?
I actually found the description quite helpful, Cassidy said. And by God, once you get it right, it's worth it.
Is it? Shelby asked, leaning forward. I wasn't sure, but maybe we should give it a go.
Are you kidding? Cassidy asked. Jonah was basically made for that sort of thing. Trust me, try it.
Ladies, that wasn't even my favorite part, Emily said.
I was all a flutter at the end when he met her out on that balcony. There were all those people down below, but they just...
A chorus of oohs and ahs went around the circle.
For me, it's not so much about the way the scenes play out, Cassidy said. Because let's be honest, a lot of it is more than any of us would really indulge in.
Heads nodded in agreement.
But there's a freedom in it, she continued.
I think that's what I'm enjoying the most.
I leaned down, reaching into my bag to dig out my Kindle.
You know what I really appreciate, Dixie said, glancing up from her knitting. I feel like I've been able to connect with Clyde in ways we haven't in years.
That's so beautiful, Emily said.
It is, Dixie said, her expression going wistful. Here, I thought my lady parts had all but dried up. They just needed a little spark to wake them up again.
Good for you, Cassidy said.
Get a girl, Scarlet said with a grin. You're never too old to rev up your engine, Dixie said, pointing around the circle with one of her knitting needles. Don't forget that.
I won't, Scarlet said, leaning back in her chair. I plan on having orgasms until the day I die.
Use it or lose it, Dixie said. Although take it from me, if you lose it, you can still bring her back to life. Clyde and I ain't what we used to be, but some old-fashioned horizontal refreshment is still plumb good, even at our age.
I blinked a few times, still bent over with my arm in my bottomless bag. What on earth were they talking about? I sat up and leaned closer to Shelby.
I thought this was a book club, I whispered.
It is, she whispered back.
Then why does it sound like Dixie Miller is talking about sex?
Because she is, Shelby said, as if that was what all 70-plus-year-old women talked about at book clubs.
Why? Haven't you read the book? She asked.
Just the beginning. Everyone said I should come anyway, but I'm lost.
Oh,
Shelby said, like it all made sense to her now.
Skip to chapter 6.
I dug around in my bag again until I found my Kindle, then swiped through the pages to chapter 6. The rest of the women continued their conversation. Emily started in on a list of 10 ways to get in a quickie when you're pressed for time, and I started reading. My eyes slid across the page, a scene that began with the two main characters chatting over dinner in a fancy restaurant. Their conversation quickly turned seductive, then became downright dirty. He leaned over the table and described a long list of things he planned on doing to her as soon as he had the chance. Just reading the dialogue made my heart pump. The female character got up and made her way to the ladies' room. A minute later, her date joined her. I tracked the words faster now, the scene getting intense, clothes being taken off piece by piece, each article exposing new areas of skin to be touched and kissed. Low murmurs and sexy growls, neither of them seeming to care that they could be caught at any moment. I kept reading, feeling my cheeks flush and everything below the waist tingle. The couple in the book started having sex. Their positioning seemed unlikely, if not impossible, but it was written so convincingly. I was transported to that posh bathroom with marble tile and wide mirrors. I could see it all. The way he maneuvered her body into previously unknown positions that allowed him to drive his abnormally large penis deep inside her. Her blissful pleasure as he gave her the most amazing, intense, and all-encompassing orgasm of her life. And it didn't end there. A waitress opened the door, but the salacious couple didn't stop. Despite being seen, and the startled waitress staying to watch, they continued their breathtaking foray into sexual exploration. In real life, I had no desire for someone to watch me have sex, but I was captivated by this riveting scene in which two people overcome with sexual desire threw off their inhibitions and participated in a symphony of dirty talk and even dirtier actions, resulting in multiple orgasms, including a masturbatory climax for the watching waitress. I'd spent my adult life working in the music industry. I'd toured with rock stars. I'd walked in on more than my fair share of people having sex, sometimes in odd places or with more than two participants. but I'd never seen or done anything like what I'd just read. Letting out a long breath, I closed the book. I was warm, the pressure between my legs making me want to squirm in my chair. The discussion continued, and it turned out the book had a lot more than vibrantly written erotic sex. The plot sounded engaging, and everyone talked about how much they swooned over the romantic ending. The epilogue was a favorite, apparently including some extremely arousing sexual exploits on a couch, which the ladies in my circle agreed were worth trying at least once. Except Dixie. She and Clyde preferred to keep it basic so neither of them broke a hip. Nadine stood and called for everyone's attention again.
Ladies, we're almost out of time. Before y'all go, don't forget we have a recipe-sharing circle online with plenty of libido-enhancing meals and ingredients. Emily was kind enough to add her write-up on 5 ways to get your man aroused when he's tired. And I think we can all agree that Scarlett's contribution last week on the topic of oral activities was enlightening, so we've put a short summary there for you as well.
June rose from her seat.
The next book is already posted on the website and is available in both ebook and paperback formats. Piper has once again ordered extra copies from neighboring libraries to meet the demand. And if you'd like to read similar books by comparable authors, there's a list for your reference. Any questions?
Dolores, an elderly woman with a wispy gray bun, raised her hand.
No, Dolores, you cannot spike Murray's food with extra Viagra, Nadine said before the woman could speak.
Dolores lowered her arm with a scowl.
Thank you for attending, June said. And enjoy those orgasms, someone said from the back.
Her exclamation was met with whoops and hollers around the room.
It's hot, right?
Shelby asked, pointing at my Kindle. I nodded, still feeling a little shell-shocked.
I had no idea. Read the rest and you'll be hooked, she said with a little grin. Just plan on Gibson being overwhelmed by your enthusiasm at first. It happens to all of them. Jonah adjusted, and now... She sighed heavily, fanning herself. So amazing. You'll both be very happy. Trust me.
I helped the women clean up and, at Nadine's urging, packed a plate full of food to bring back to Gibson. George put away chairs and tables, casting adoring looks at June. They sure seemed happy. In fact, all the women in attendance had smiles on their faces. They looked good, vibrant, and alive, even the older ladies. I wondered if it was the female bonding over a naughty book, or the extra sex they were having with the men in their lives. Maybe it was a bit of both. Regardless, I needed to get back to Gibson's. The throbbing between my legs had only grown, and I couldn't stop thinking about the scene in that book. The things he'd done to her. I wasn't sure half of them were possible, but I was going to make Gibson a very happy man tonight while we gave a few of them a try.
Chapter 31. Gibson. A bunch of trucks were parked around the perimeter of the softball field, bathing it in light, necessary for a night game when your field didn't have fancy lighting. It did mean there were about a dozen places where the light blinded the players if they glanced in the wrong direction, but they'd also be guzzling moonshine in between innings, so a few blind spots weren't going to make a difference. The school buses were already lined up, waiting to take people, players and spectators alike, home after the game. Here in Bootleg, we took our drinking seriously, but we weren't stupid. Cars and trucks stayed parked at the field overnight, and by the end of Wasted Wednesday, when everyone tried to recover from the town-wide hangover, the now sober townsfolk would wander back to get their vehicles and drive them home. The moonshine concession stands were doing big business, and the bleachers were full of Bootleg residents. They scarfed down hot dogs and baskets of greasy fries, and just about everyone of age had a cup of moonshine in their hand. Except me, of course. I didn't drink. Mostly that was because of my dad. He drank, so I didn't. although it wasn't as simple as a stubborn attempt to turn myself in the opposite direction of everything he'd ever done. I worked with my hands, much like he had. He'd been more handyman than craftsman, but there was a similarity to our trades that hadn't swayed me from my profession. I sang and played guitar. I'd gotten that from him, too. I didn't drink because it felt like too big a risk to take. I'd had alcohol before. I'd been everything from tipsy to shit-faced, out-cold, drunk off my ass. The problem was, I liked it too much. It was a guaranteed escape. Felt good to check out and stumble around without a care in the world, my head swimming in liquor. I knew what I'd find at the end of that road, and I'd made a conscious choice to take a different one. We were playing the Gableton Miners tonight. Their shirts featured a cartoon man covered in coal dust, holding a shovel like a baseball bat. They wore headlamps over their caps, adding to the light show on the field. Opal warmed up with a few practice swings while Buck and Nash stretched their shoulders. Bowie looked right at home with a mitt dangling from his hand. Baseball had always been his game. The guy was good, even when he was three sheets to the wind in the seventh. Jameson was nearby, being all kissy face with Leah May. I thought about barking at him to get his head in the game. It's what I usually did, but kept my mouth shut. It was weird, but I didn't mind seeing my brother loving on his girl so much these days. Scarlett walked toward the dugout, the half-empty mason jar of moonshine in her hand, her long ponytail sticking out the back of her Cockspurs hat. Someone in the stands shouted her name, and she raised her moonshine in greeting, a big-ass smile on her face. I took a deep breath, a sense of resignation stealing over me. I wanted to have this conversation with her like I wanted a kick to the teeth, but it needed to happen. And although my sister could hold her alcohol like nobody's business, it'd be better if she was completely sober. That was probably her first drink, so now was the time. I flexed my busted hand, feeling the scabs pull. I hadn't broken anything when I'd punched the beam, but I'd bloodied my knuckles a bit. With a sigh, I walked over to stand beside her, face the field rather than looking at her straight on. "Hey."
"Hey yourself," she said. "Where's Maya?"
Her question poked at the big knot of feelings in my chest. Not because there was anything wrong with Callie. She was over by the concession stands with Cash. But it was an in-my-face reminder of who Scarlett really was. She had my back, always, even when I didn't deserve it. "She's getting a hot dog."
"Okay."
She didn't say anything else, just stood next to me. She knew I was fixing to say something. I could tell by the way she waited, doing me the courtesy of not forcing me to make eye contact with her. "You might have been right about some things," I said finally. "I'm not going to say he was a good dad, because he wasn't, but you weren't totally wrong about him."
"No shit, Sherlock."
"And maybe..." I paused, clearing my throat. We Bodines were terrible at apologies, especially me and Scarlett. "Maybe I shouldn't have been so hard on you about it. Loyalty is one of your best qualities."
"Oh, Gibson."
She threw herself at me, sloshing moonshine all over, and wrapped her arms around me. I grumbled and squeezed her back.
"You're a good man, Gibson Bodine," she said. "I'm glad you're my brother."
"Yeah, you're all right, too." I pried her arms off me and pushed her back a step. "Go get warmed up. We have a game to win."
"Sure thing, coach."
She punched me in the arm before walking away, her ponytail swinging.
I felt lighter.
like a bit of the weight I'd carried for so long had just lifted. I went back to the dugout to get my team ready for the game and spotted Darren in the stands. The bribe-taken lab tech hadn't bolted on us. It helped that he was staying free of charge in one of Scarlet's rentals. Sheriff Tucker had interviewed him twice, and he'd been true to his word, told him everything. At this point, we were keeping him here in Bootleg more for his protection than for his cooperation. Once the investigation against the judge finally broke open, things were liable to get dicey. We'd all rest easier when he was behind bars, but we had one shot at him. As much as the weight stretched my patience like a stringy piece of Misty Lynn's gum, I knew the sheriff was right to hold out until the case against him was rock solid. I did a double take. Speaking of that nicotine gum-chewing shrew, Misty Lynn was currently seated next to Darren, arching her back to shove her fake boobs at him. The lopsided grin on his face told me she had him fooled. I rolled my eyes. We'd have to pull him aside and give him a warning. I didn't much like Darren, but I still wouldn't wish Misty Lynn on him. "Okay, players, let's get warmed up." I clapped my hands together a few times. Coaching the Cockspurs was mostly a matter of herding the players as they got progressively more drunk, then getting them on the school bus so they made it home. It was a pretty good time. I had to shout at George twice to stop trying to grab June over at home plate, she was our umpire, and get his ass over here to warm up. That and guzzle an extra large jar of moonshine. Getting George sloppy drunk early was our concession to having a former professional athlete on our team. Jonah joined us after kissing his girl Shelby and sending her up to the stands. "You gonna show us all that muscle is good for something tonight?" I asked. "Or is it just to look pretty?" He shook his head, smiling. "At least I don't look like a big angry lumberjack." Bowie glanced back, raising an eyebrow, his eyes darting between us. "The shitty thing is, I can't even insult your face," I said, "because we look too fucking much alike." Jonah shrugged. "What are you gonna do? We're Bodines. We make this look good." "That we do, brother." I gave him a friendly slap on the back. "That we do." Bowie was still watching, but I ignored him, my attention suddenly fixed on the beautiful girl with crazy hair strolling our direction. My blue flannel was tied in a knot at her waist, emphasizing her curves, and her denim shorts gave me an eyeful of her tanned thighs. She had a hot dog in one hand, Cash's leash in the other. I didn't need an ounce of moonshine. I was drunk in love with that girl. She came around the outside of the rusty chain-link fence. Cash jumped up, his paws sticking through the gaps, his tail wagging.
"Is that Daddy?"
Callie asked, grinning down at our dog.
"Good boy! Say hi to Daddy!"
I crouched in front of Cash and stuck my fingers through the fence to pet his head. He was too excited to hold still, licking my hands and the fence with them. "Oh, hey, buddy." He finally stopped flailing his head around long enough for me to rub between his ears a little. "You being a good boy and watching out for our girl?"
"You bet he is," she said. "We also discovered he loves hot dogs, especially when they're snatched out of Wade Zirkle's hand."
"You are a good boy." She laughed, and cliche as it was, the sound was music to my ears. I stood and held onto the fence, leaning forward to kiss her through one of the gaps. Someone behind me whistled, but I didn't care. Callie's lips were soft, and she treated me to a little swipe of her tongue.
"Get a room,"
Jameson called out. I twisted my arm around to flip him the bird, but I was smiling against Callie's mouth while I did it. Reluctantly, I pulled away. From the corner of my eye, I saw Misty Lynn glaring daggers at Callie, while Darren seemed to be trying to draw her attention back to him. Whatever, she wasn't my problem.
"I brought this for you,"
Callie said, pushing the hot dog through the fence.
"Thought you might be hungry."
Funny how such a little thing could punch me in the feelings like that, but the thoughtfulness of my girl bringing me a hot dog before the game made me really fucking happy. "Thanks, honey." She tilted her chin up, and I leaned in to kiss her again.
"I'm going to sit up with Shelby. Good luck, coach."
"Have fun." I leaned against the fence with the hot dog in my hand, watching her go, admiring the sway of her hips, the roundness of her backside. I was gonna nibble on that ass later.
"Gibbs, quit ogling,"
Bowie said.
"You look like a lovesick puppy over there."
Well, he wasn't wrong. I walked back to the dugout and ate half the hot dog in one bite. Bowie smirked at me.
"What?"
I asked, my mouth full of food.
"You got rust in your beard."
I just shrugged and kept chewing. "Worth it." The game got going, the moonshine flowed, and like usual, we were ahead by the fifth inning stretch. The miners were stumbling over their shoes and dropping catches. One particularly drunk player chased a guy around the field with the ball in her hand, trying to get her own teammate out. Truth was, a bunch of bootleggers had founded the West Virginia Moonshine Softball League. They'd been the ones to add the moonshine drinking rule, knowing it usually gave our town the advantage. No one could handle their liquor like a bootlegger could. Jameson caught a pop fly from flat on his back in the bottom of the fifth, earning him a chorus of cheers from the hometown crowd. Scarlett was her usual badass self, scoring a run in the sixth and sending Opal home on her next at bat. George had been responsible for our first two scores, and now, even though he could barely stand up straight after all the moonshine, he kept earning his keep, using his long reach to tag a miner out at third base in the eighth. Then he doubled over, laughing hysterically like it was the funniest thing he'd ever done. But like a drunk Scarlet after a big meal at Moonshine, the miners rallied in the top of the ninth. I shouted instructions to the team and squinted, looking across at the miners' dugout for a covert coffee maker or stash of energy drinks. Two runs later, we were all tied up. Bernie O'Dell's voice on the loudspeaker announcing the score sent a hush through the otherwise rowdy crowd. "Shit," I muttered. I cast a glance into the stands, finding Callie. She sat next to Shelby with cash in her lap. Someone had given her a Cockspurs cap, and her colorful hair hung around her shoulders. Damn, she was adorable. Blowing out of breath, I turned my attention back to the game. Bowie was still on the pitcher's mound, but he was swaying like he might not make it through the inning.
"Come on, Bo,"
I shouted.
"Bodine up!"
Like I just yelled a sobriety-inducing battle cry, Bowie straightened, getting his legs under him. He wound up for the pitch, looking steady and focused. Opal signaled behind the batter, we just needed one more out, then we'd have a chance to win. If any of my players were still capable of hitting. Bowie's pitch flew straight, smacking into Opal's mitt with a puff of dust.
"Strike!"
The crowd cheered, but quickly quieted again. Bowie dug his toe in the dirt, rolling the ball in his hand. After another signal from Opal, he nodded, wound up, let loose. I heard the smack of the ball hitting leather. The miner stumbled, the force of his swing almost pulling him over. The crowd cheered again. Bowie didn't acknowledge it. He was in the zone.
"Strike!"
A hush settled over the field. One more out was all we needed. Half the miners had passed out in their dugout, but they had just enough conscious players to finish out the game, and the score was still tied. There was a rustle of air as everyone present took and held a collective breath. Bowie's pitch flew dead center over the plate. The miner swung, and for a second, it looked like he'd connect. His bat came within a kitten's whisker of skimming the top of the ball. Opal caught the pitch. The miner spun around in a circle, and June yelled the final, "Strike!" I blew out the breath I'd been holding. Bowie took off his hat and waved at the crowd as they cheered him in. Cassidy ran out and jumped on him, throwing her arms around his neck and her legs around his waist. They toppled to the dirt together, laughing to even louder whoops and hollers from the crowd. But it wasn't over yet. Bottom of the ninth, and Jonah was up to bat. He chugged water, then wiped his mouth with the back of his hand. "Go get him, brother," I said. The miners took the field, and their unnaturally liquor-tolerant pitcher stood on the mound. The girl didn't even look tipsy. It was like she was Gableton's version of Scarlet. Jonah's Cockspur shirt was snug around his muscled arms. He held the bat up, his eyes on the pitcher, stance firm. The first pitch flew in, sailing past Jonah's bat.
"Strike!"
"Shit," I mumbled. Jonah readjusted his footing and got into position, the end of the bat wobbling in a tight circle over his shoulder. Second pitch, and Jonah swung hard, his body twisting. The ball hit the catcher's mitt with a thump.
"Strike!"
Growling, I clenched my teeth. "Come on, Jonah!" The chant started low while the pitcher took her time setting up. It rose behind me, the word rippling through the crowd, gaining strength and volume.
"Jonah! Jonah! Jonah!"
Feet stomped against the bleachers, hands clapped in time with the syllables of his name. Scarlet and Opal joined in beside me, cheering for him. Jonah's hands gripped the bat hard, and he narrowed his eyes. The crowd kept chanting as the pitcher wound up and released. A sudden silence filled the air as everyone stopped cheering and watched the ball fly toward home plate. Jonah swung, and his bat connected with a metallic crack of aluminum. The ball flew into the dark night sky, almost disappearing against the starry backdrop. I watched the arc, trying to judge the distance. Their outfielders tracked its path, backing up fast. One stumbled and hit the grass, rolling onto his stomach. The other kept his feet running backward, his face tilted up, gloved hand ready to make the catch. The ball kept right on going. The outfielder backed into one of the moonshine stands as the ball sailed over his head. It came down with a hard thunk in what looked like the bed of Rhett Ginsler's pickup truck.
"Home run!"
June yelled. The crowd went crazy. Jonah dropped the bat and jogged the bases, a contented smile on his face. All the Cockspurs who weren't too drunk to walk rushed out to meet him at home plate, shouting and jumping. George and Nash tried to hoist him up on their shoulders, but they were too unsteady after all the moonshine. They crumpled into a heap with Jonah laughing on top. For a second, Jonah's eyes met mine. I gave him a proud chin tip. "Gibbs," Devlin jogged up beside me, and his expression wiped the smile from my face. Something was wrong. My eyes darted to Callie, but she was fine, still in the stands with Shelby. She had her arms around Cash, like she was trying to keep him from scrambling away. "What's wrong?" I asked.
"Lee Williams," he said, and my blood instantly ran cold. "He's here. I ran to my car to get Scarlet's hoodie, and I saw him."
"You sure? You sober?"
"Stone cold sober. Never doing that again. And yes, I'm sure. I wouldn't raise the alarm if I wasn't."
"Keep it quiet," I said. "I don't want a scene. I'll get Maya out of here. I saw Darren in the stands. He's still here?"
"I don't think so, but I'll check."
"Thanks, Dev. Make sure everyone gets on the buses to go home, and don't tell Scarlet until morning. She'll just want to go after him."
"Agreed." Without another word, I raced around the fence to the bleachers, dodging through my neighbors. Callie was at the bottom, wrestling with Cash, who was trying to break free of his leash to get to me. "We gotta go." I grabbed the leash from her and took her elbow to spin her around. "Now."
"What's going on?"
Devlin spotted Lee Williams. She didn't reply. I kept hold of her arm and led her around the bleachers. Despite my desire to get her the fuck out of here, I didn't run, didn't want to call too much attention. We walked to the edge of the field where I'd parked my truck. I opened her side first, casting a glance around to see if anyone had followed while she climbed in with Cash. It was too damn dark. I couldn't see a thing. The crowd had congregated on the field to celebrate. No one seemed to have noticed us leave. That was good. I went around and hopped in, slamming the door shut. "Get down," I said, "just in case." Callie ducked down, leaning toward the center to stay out of sight. Cash seemed to sense things were serious. He hunkered down on the seat with her. We hightailed it out of there as fast as I dared, heading out of town. My eyes darted between the road and my rearview mirror. No one followed that I could see, unless they were trailing pretty far back and weren't using their headlights. As soon as we were past the edge of town, I gunned it, tearing up the road to my house. I took the corners fast, leaning hard. If someone was behind us, I wanted to get to my private drive before they could see me turn. Then they'd drive right by and end up in the middle of nowhere. "Hold on," I said, my turn coming up. I cut my lights and downshifted instead of braking, flying around the corner just shy of fast enough to flip us over. Callie braced herself against the cab, one arm holding Cash around his middle. The tires spat gravel at the surrounding trees. I didn't slow down until my house was in sight. I pulled to a stop, and we got out, rushing into the house. Cash jumped with excitement like we were playing an energetic game. Callie and I both planted our hands on the front door and slammed it closed. I threw the lock, and she covered it with her palm. We were both breathing hard, and my heart felt like it was stuck in my throat. "Fuck," I muttered. "I'm sorry if I overreacted, but I don't want to take any chances." She turned around and put her back to the door, leaning her head against it.
"It's okay. We're safe here either way."
My phone buzzed, so I pulled it out of my pocket. "Devlin."
"Second sighting. Leah May saw him getting a cup of moonshine."
"Me." "Where is he now?" "Devlin."
"I'm checking. Darren's already back at the Red House."
I glanced up at Callie. "Definitely him. Leah May confirmed it. Devlin's trying to find him." She nodded. Cash jumped up, front paws on my legs.
"Come here, buddy,"
she said, and took him to the couch. She sat with her legs tucked beneath her, Cash in her lap. "Devlin."
"Spotted him heading to his car."
Shit. I couldn't ask Dev to follow him. He needed to do my job and get everyone's drunk asses on the buses, not to mention watch out for Scarlett and get her home. But at least we knew the asshole hadn't followed us out here. "Me." "We made it home, safe for tonight." Devlin.
"Good. We're fine out here. I've got it handled."
Me. "Thanks, man. Damn, it was good to have family."
"We need to tell Bootleg the truth."
Callie's voice made me look up. No. I put my phone down. "We need to keep your secret now more than ever." I could tell by the set of her jaw that she wasn't letting this go.
"People are starting to figure it out. I see it in the way they look at me. Do we want this blowing up in our face and turning into a town-wide spectacle? Right now, we can still control the information and deal with the uproar."
Crossing my arms, I chewed on that for a second. She had a point.
"Plus, we need to warn everyone about Lee Williams. He's dangerous. We can't sit on that knowledge if it puts our neighbors at risk."
"Coming forward puts you at risk."
"I know, but we have to. It's the right thing to do, Gibbs. We can talk to Sheriff Tucker first, but I really think we have to. It's time.
There was a lot about this I didn't like. It was my job to protect her. Could I keep her safe if news of who she was carried all through Bootleg? I'd been hoping the Kendalls wouldn't have to know she was here until the authorities knocked on their door to make an arrest. But then again, if Bootleg knew, I'd have an entire town full of people watching out for her, keeping their eye on Lee Williams. Usually, I didn't like to rely on other people. That opened you up to disappointment. But maybe I wasn't giving my town enough credit. All right, I said. I'll call Harlan, then Nadine. We need a secret town meeting. Chapter 32. Gibson. Old Jefferson Waverly's barn was packed to the rafters with Bootleg Springs residents, most of them still nursing hangovers after last night's Cockspurs win. Wasted Wednesday had been interrupted by the call for a secret town meeting, the chain of communication kicked off by Nadine Tucker. We'd given them until 6 in the evening to recover, and true to form, everyone had turned out. I sat on a crate up front, my back knotted with tension. Callie was tucked under my arm, her legs pulled in like she was trying to disappear into me. We'd left cash at home. There was enough to worry about without having our attention divided. Callie and I stayed home all day, relying on family to be our eyes and ears in town. Lee Williams was definitely here. June had discovered that he'd taken a room in the shabby Bootleg Springs Motor Inn just on the outside edge of town. Jonah and Shelby had spotted him at Moonshine Diner around noon, having lunch. Leah May and Jameson had kept eyes on him while he wandered around downtown, acting like he was just another tourist. Everyone else had been on high alert, watching. After that, our little team of Bodine, Tucker, Thompson, McAllister spies had lost track of him. Callie and I had spent a tense hour not knowing where he'd gone. Had he left town? Not knowing why he was here or whether he knew about Callie made it worse. There was no way he'd come back to Bootleg just for a visit. But without knowing why he was here, I didn't know how worried we needed to be. He'd turned up later, driving in from the other side of town. I had a feeling he'd been exploring the area. It stood to reason he didn't know Callie was here, and that the Kendalls didn't know either. My family and I all had our ears open to the town gossip. Not a single person had been heard whispering that Maya was Callie, that Callie Kendall was back in town. I figured Callie was right, and a few people had figured it out, or at least they had strong suspicions. But if they did, they weren't talking about it yet, not where anyone could hear them. More lawn chairs scraped over the floor, and people took their seats. My heart thumped, adrenaline making me jittery. I wanted to scoop Callie into my lap and hide her from everyone. Coming forward with the truth meant it was only a matter of time before the world knew she was here. The more people who knew a secret, the harder it was to keep. And we were about to share our secret with an entire damn town. My family sat up front with us, Devlin resting his elbows on his knees with Scarlet by his side, Bowie and Cassidy hands intertwined. This might have been the first secret town meeting Cass had actually been invited to. We tended to hold these when we needed to do something just outside the law. Jameson and Leah May sat beside Jonah and Shelby. Jenny was on Callie's right, with Jimmy Bob Prosser on the other side of her. George took up space for two, as did his father. George and Shelby's mom sat with them, as did June and Nadine. Harlan, too. Hell, it might have been Harlan's first secret town meeting as well. It felt good to have them all here, sitting together. We weren't all related by blood. Some hadn't been here that long, but I felt the force of their support. We were a united front, here for a purpose. Mayor Augie Hornsblatt, dressed as usual in denim overalls and a cowboy hat, climbed onto a milk crate up front and spoke into a wireless mic.
"Let's call this meeting to order. Quiet down now."
The hum of chatter faded as people turned their attention to the mayor. His eyes flicked to mine. 20 minutes ago, we'd had an impromptu meeting with the mayor in a secluded corner of the barn while my brothers, George and Devlin, stood around acting casual, blocking people's views. He'd gone white as a sheet, then teared up a bit and crushed Callie in a bear hug. We'd filled him in on the basics, and she'd happily produced the DNA results that verified her identity. That had been easy to get. Apparently, June had a guy. I had no idea why June would have a guy who did DNA testing, but I appreciated it nonetheless.
"Y'all, the purpose of this meeting is something that we've been waiting a long time for. 13 years ago, we lost one of our own. Callie Kendall disappeared on a July evening, gone without a trace. And for most of those 13 years, we didn't know the truth about what happened to her."
Murmurs ran through the crowd.
"Recently, we got the terrible news that her remains had been found and identified,"
Mayor Augie continued.
"It was over. We didn't know the how or the why, but we knew her fate. Or so we thought."
The murmurs grew stronger, a hum of discontent and curiosity filling the air. Mayor Augie held up a hand for quiet.
"I have the very special honor and pleasure of bringing you this announcement. Callie Kendall is alive and well, and she's here with us tonight."
The barn erupted with noise, voices, questions, people shooting out of their chairs, knocking them over.
"I knew she wasn't dead."
"Where is she?
Can we see her?"
"I don't believe that for a second. Is this a joke? Because it ain't funny."
"What if it's another fake? Do her parents know?"
That last question made me whip around in alarm. Callie rubbed a soothing hand on my chest, and Jenny reached across to give my leg a squeeze.
"It's all right," Jenny said.
I wasn't sure if she was talking to me or Callie, maybe both of us.
Now, let's all settle down,"
Mayor Augie said, holding his hand up.
"Settle down now. We'll answer your questions, but y'all gotta be quiet."
George glanced around at the increasingly noisy crowd. He stood, unfolding from his spot on a crate to his full and rather impressive height.
"Quiet, please," he bellowed.
His voice echoed off the ceiling, and the audience went silent. With a nod at the mayor, he sat down.
"Thank you, George,"
Mayor Augie said.
"First, let me address your concerns about her being another pretender. We have confirmed, with scientific evidence, that she is in fact Callie Kendall. There's no question about it, folks. She's real, and she's back."
He paused and let that settle over the audience. Millie Waggle was up front, sitting across the aisle from us. She caught my eye and gave me a subtle nod. I had a feeling she was one who'd already figured it out.
"Callie, sweetheart, would you please join me up front?"
Mayor Augie said, his voice gentle. He held out a hand to her. My heart stood still as she emerged from under my protective arm. She seemed to move in slow motion, separating from me, rising to her feet. I could almost see the Maya facade fall away, the adopted identity dissolving into the air, leaving her raw, exposed, real. The Callie I remembered, the Callie we'd all known.
Gasps and murmurs greeted her as she turned to face Bootleg Springs. Mayor Augie handed her the microphone and gave her a reassuring pat on the shoulder. She took the mic and met my eyes. I could see her fear. It made me want to scoop her up and carry her out of here, but she took a deep breath and began.
Many of you know me as Maya Davis, and that name wasn't a lie. I've been Maya for the last 13 years, since I left Bootleg Springs, but I am Callie Kendall.
She shifted, re-gripping the mic, while the audience murmured again. I nodded to her. She could do this.
I ran away and disappeared because I was afraid for my life. I'd been abused at home from the time I was young. The night of my disappearance...
She closed her eyes, and a tear trailed down her cheek. It took her a second, but she opened them again.
I was badly injured, trying to get away. Jonah Bodine Sr. found and helped me. He obviously didn't murder me or hit me with his car. He found a bleeding, terrified girl on the side of the road, and he helped me get to safety. I went to a little town in upstate New York where a wonderful family took me in. They loved me and cared for me and helped me heal. When I became an adult, I went out and lived my life. I did my best to move on from my past. I wasn't Callie Kendall anymore. I was Maya Davis.
Why didn't you tell anyone?
Someone asked from the back.
Fear,
she said.
I was afraid for my life if my parents ever found me. It hurt me terribly to leave all the good things in my life behind, all the friends and people I cared about.
Her eyes landed on me.
But I didn't have a choice. I want you all to know I'm so sorry you hurt for me for so long, and I'm sorry I didn't tell everyone the truth about who I am when I first came back.
What kind of danger are we talking?
Are you saying the judge hurt you?
Why are you here now?
The questions were coming from every direction. I wanted to turn around and tell them all to shut the fuck up and let her talk.
Yes, Judge Kendall.
She trailed off again and swallowed hard.
The judge is a dangerous man, and he has a lot to lose if I reappear. He wants me to stay missing, stay dead. He had a man who works for him bribe a lab tech into faking the forensics report on the remains of that girl in New York to say it was me. And that's not the worst of it. He has a long history of using coercion, threats, bribery, and even violence to get what he wants and maintain his power. When I was a girl, I hid the truth from everyone. No one knew what was happening to me. Now I'm back to face my past. I'm here to clear Jonah Bodine's name and to find a way to bring the real wrongdoers to justice.
That was met with a round of applause. My family and I glanced around, meeting each other's eyes. This was the bootleg who'd raised us.
What about Gibson?
Someone shouted.
Did he know where you were?
No. Jonah and Connie kept my secret even from their children, and they didn't do it just for my safety. They did it to protect their family and their town. They understood that it would put a lot of people in danger if the truth got out.
Gibbs, why did you have her picture?
Were you running around with her when she was 16? Gibson Bodine, how dare you?
Weren't you 25?
I ground my teeth together and clenched my fists.
Gibson Bodine was my friend,
Callie said, her voice suddenly clear and strong.
He was 20 and I was 16, but we were just friends. Gibson was respectful and kind. He gave me his friendship without any strings or expectations. He never acted inappropriately. Even though we were alone so much, he certainly could have. I trusted him more than I trusted anyone in the world. I still do. And y'all should be ashamed of yourself for assuming the worst of him. Gibson Bodine is a good man. He's the best man I know.
I stared at her, my eyes wide. My throat was thick, and it felt like my heart might have gotten stuck in my ribs.
I'm going on 30 now, and I'm plenty old enough to say I love him. I loved him as a friend when I was young, and I love him as so much more now. I'm the luckiest person in the world to be Gibson Bodine's girl.
A ripple went through the audience, some people reacting to Callie's speech with oohs and ahs, others with phrases like, how sweet, and they're just precious, and bless my soul, this is so much to take in. I rose from my chair and went up to the front. They didn't need every detail of her painful past. It hurt her to remember it, even more to speak of it, and she'd told them enough, and I didn't want them getting sidetracked looking for the juicy details of our current relationship. Right now, we needed to deal with the threat in our town. She handed me the mic, and I paused, captivated by her beautiful face. The tip of her tongue darted into the notch in her lip. She did that when she was nervous, so I took her hand before turning to address the town. Callie came forward today because we need y'all's help. Just so we're clear, the judge is the bad guy. We got that? People spoke in low voices to their neighbors, but they nodded. We need to come together as a town to protect our girl. That means, for now, she ain't Callie to anyone outside this room. She's still Maya. Understood? More nods. They were with us. Sheriff Tucker is working on things from a law enforcement standpoint. There's still evidence to gather to make a case against the judge. There were sudden calls for bootleg justice from several parts of the barn. I know. Believe me, I'd love nothing more than to get my hands on that sorry sumbitch, but this goes beyond bootleg, and it calls for the kind of justice that ends with him in prison, where he can't hurt anyone again. Shouts of agreement filled the air, and several people raised their fists. We have reason to believe a low-down, dirty scum who works for the judge is in town right now. This time there were boos and voices bordering on outrage. It ain't clear yet why he's here, and we need solid evidence to tie him to the judge, so no one take this into your own hands. This ain't a situation for bootleg justice either. But it's important he doesn't find out that she's Callie.
We've got this, Gibbs. You can count on us. Callie who?
Never even heard of her. I nodded, squeezing Callie's hand again. We're asking a lot of y'all, and it means a lot that you'll stand by us. My brothers rose from their chairs, Bowie followed by Jonah and Jameson, to nod gratefully at the people around us. Scarlet looked teary when she stood. This was us, my family, my people, and holy shit, if it hadn't taken Callie Kendall coming back from the dead to make me see it, make me realize what I had.
Are y'all getting hitched?
A woman asked from somewhere in the middle. Might have been Clarabel.
Callie, are you here to stay?
Are you gonna marry Gibson Bodine? I can arrange the flowers.
We should have it at the park.
Do y'all still have the trellis from Bowie and Cassidy's wedding?
What kind of cake do y'all need?
Callie laughed, touching her fingers to her lips. And what the hell, I laughed too.
Y'all are getting a bit ahead of yourselves,
I said into the mic, but I cast a quick wink at Callie.
Let's just get through the current crisis.
Sheriff Tucker and Nadine stepped up and took the mic. Callie and I went back to our seats while Harlan gave them a few more details.
a description of Lee Williams so they knew who to look out for, and more reminders to stay out of it and let law enforcement do their job. Nadine gave everyone ideas for what to do if they spotted trouble. Afterward, almost everyone present lined up to say hello to Callie. It was like the longest receiving line I'd ever seen. They gave her hugs, patted her hands, told her how much they'd missed her. There were exclamations of how pretty she'd grown, what a nice young woman she'd become. There was hardly a dry eye in the place as the surprise of the truth settled into acceptance and relief. Callie Kendall was home.
Chapter 33, Maya. I couldn't remember ever being so exhausted in my entire life. I sagged against Gibson while he unlocked the front door. My legs were heavy and my arms hung loose at my sides because I didn't have the energy to lift them. Telling the town the truth about me had been the right call. I felt it deep in my soul. The way they'd responded, rallying around us like that, made my heart so full I thought my chest might burst. In all their tearful greetings, hugs, cheek kisses, and enthusiastic suggestions for engagement and wedding ideas had made me feel like I belonged to them. But really, I always had. Cash was excited to see us, as usual. We let him inside and gave him some love and a toy filled with peanut butter. He plopped on the floor, happy as a dog could be.
"Come here," Gibson said.
He stood near the short hallway and reached out to draw me closer, tucked my hair behind one ear.
"I'm so proud of you."
"Thanks. I feel good about what we did tonight."
"Me too."
He leaned down and captured my lips with his. I slid my hands up his chest, melting into his kiss. His hands sat at my waist and his grip tightened when I brushed his lips with my tongue. A tingling energy pulsed through my body. A moment ago, I'd been so worn out, all I'd wanted was sleep. But Gibson's sensual kiss was waking me up, all my nerve endings singing. The low rumble in his chest made me smile against his lips. I nipped him gently with my teeth. "I love it when you kiss me like that."
"Honey, I've got something on my mind. You want to hear about it?"
"Tell me." His rough jaw brushed the side of my face, and he put his mouth next to my ear.
"I'm going to take those clothes off you real slow. Then I'll get you on the bed and bury my face between your legs. And I'm gonna lick that pretty pussy until you come in my mouth."
I trembled and my voice was breathy. "Yeah?"
"Uh-huh. I'll lick you until you beg me to stop. Then I'm gonna turn you over, get you on your knees, and I'm gonna hold those hips and fuck that wet pussy from behind. Maybe smack that ass a few times while I do it. You opposed to a little spanking while I fuck you?"
"No," I breathed. "Not if it's you."
"I won't hurt you, honey,"
he growled in my ear. His hand slid down to cup my ass and he squeezed.
"I just want to get a little dirty with you."
My eyes rolled back. I was already so turned on, he wasn't going to have to work very hard to get me to come. "I love it when you get dirty with me." He kissed me again, rough this time. I slid my hand down to grab his erection through his pants. He grunted, squeezing my ass cheek harder.
"Bedroom,"
he said against my mouth. Without breaking the kiss, he led me down the hall, walking backward, and I shut the bedroom door behind us. His tongue darted in and out of my mouth a few times, mimicking what he'd promised to do between my legs. Giggling, I unfastened his jeans and shoved my hands inside, wrapping my fingers around his cock. He grunted again.
"Fuck."
I was messing up his little plan, but I didn't care. While he kept kissing me, I worked his cock out of his pants, teased the tip with my fingertips, I took him by the shaft and pumped it a few times, enjoying the way he growled, the way his hips jerked like he couldn't help himself. With my other hand, I shoved his pants lower so I had better access. We both looked down at his thick erection, standing straight up. I stroked it up and down the shaft, watching as beads of moisture collected on the tip. I liked where this was going. Me in control of his pleasure, making him come with such a rush. He watched with rapt attention while I slowly lowered to my knees in front of him. With my hand firmly around the base of his cock, I slid my tongue slowly up his length. Mind if I do this first?
Darling, I ain't saying no.
He took off his shirt and tossed it on the floor. I grinned up at him. Didn't think so. He shuddered as I slid the tip in my mouth. I started slow, getting him nice and slick. His fingers twined through my hair, his grip gentle. Every low growl made me want to take in more. His cock slid in and out of my mouth and his hips started to jerk. His gaze stayed locked on me as I sucked his cock, his eyes glassy.
Fuck, that feels so good.
He massaged my head, groaning as I worked his dick in and out of my mouth. His enjoyment made my spine tingle and the pressure between my legs increase. I loved that I could do this to him. I moved faster. I didn't always finish him with my mouth, but tonight I was going.